Oh, wow. Seems like the mic works. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're just going to have to go this way. I don't know how to get this audio to work, which really, really stinks. So on the next live, we are going to have to... Let me switch over. Since I'm talking, I might as well. Where are you? Fancy cam. Transition. Howdy. So... things are weird. Things are different. Things are happening. You should be hearing music right now. Oh, I didn't realize. Let's fix my camera real quick. One moment. There we go. So, lots of experiments happening all at once because that's the only way to fly, apparently. There is music playing that will be playing in the VOD later because OBS is at least recording the things that I want it to record. Oh, is it even recording the microphone? Haha, yes it is. But apparently I can't. Oh, I can. Output selection, output type. If this messes things up, I apologize. Output selection, damn. Program, output preview, output scene. Oh, the virtual camera will be restarted to apply this change. Let's hope this works. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, no. That didn't happen like it should have. That was really stupid. Let's make this happen again. Go here.
You can put something on the controls right there.
Okay. Oh, no. What is going on? Oh, that's the chat. That's good. Da-da-da-da. Did it fix in here? It did not. What if... oh, again, if this... screws things up. I will be right back, I promise. Stop recording that. Go away. Technical difficulties. Good lord. This should not be this difficult. Why is that happening? I don't understand. Oh, I get it. I get it. We gotta do it that way, and then we're just gonna have to deal with the microphone situation. I'll figure it out next time. Yeah, there it goes. Okay. Well, it's the off season, so... technical difficulties are just kind of happening. I really just throw the show together for the off season because I spend more time setting up for the actual season and blah blah blah. So, we have a couple of things to do today. I actually came in with a plan, so I did do a little bit of planning this time around. So before we get too deep into this, I just said it in chat, but for the VOD, I have to say this again. Thank you a whole bunch to Chris, a longtime viewer of the channel, because he was helping me with some troubleshooting issues that still haven't been figured out, but at least we have some sort of audio. And yeah, we are going to do the thing. So before we actually get into the news, let's lay out a little bit of a roadmap. I want to go through a Loudwire list that is the, where'd it go? I have it right here. Top 67 best rock and metal songs of 2024. So we're going to run through that real quick. And then there's another thing in here that we're going to do that's not traditional news for the channel. It's just a little bit of something so that I can clip it for the secondary channel. Just because, again, experiments all over the place, man. The experiment that is failing right now is Rumble. I am currently streaming in three different places, directly to Rumble and then through Rumble to YouTube and also to Twitch, because we haven't streamed on Twitch in years at this point, but I figure I might as well, if it's there and it's free, I might as well do the thing. So hopefully I will have that bug worked out by the next time we go live. Also, next time we go live was originally going to be next Tuesday, but day job's screwing with me, so might not be next Tuesday, might be next Wednesday, might not be next week at all, might just have to do a reaction video for next week, and then we'll see you in 2 weeks. It really depends. Stay tuned to the socials. Stay tuned to the community page on the YouTube, because that is going to be how I let you know what's going on with next week's episode. All of that being said, let's transition to the thing. Where is it? Reading. That's the one. Also, as we're getting into this, big shout outs to Dubby for being awesome. turn it on. There it is. Oops. No. Dubby, where'd you go? Do I not have it? I thought I had it. Global sub, global effect. Nope. I thought I had it on this page, but I guess not. But yeah, Dubby is our channel partner doing the thing with the energy drinks because I need my caffeine. And Dubby is actually a decent source of caffeine. And we're going to talk about him probably once or twice more throughout this course of the stream. So I'm not going to go too much into it at the front. So all of that being said, how is this? Let's get out of studio mode so I can get a little better. That's translating well. This is a new frame, and I'm super excited about it. This is kind of what I've been spending the last 2 days on, speaking of getting ready for new season things. But let's get into this list of the things, and then we'll get into some news, and then we'll get into some other things, and it'll be fun. All right, so starting this list off, we have Arch Enemy Dream Stealer. Oof, I have not heard anything this year from Arch Enemy that I would say is best of the year for their technically their genre is death metal, I'm pretty sure, and just not super impressed with them this year. So yeah, I don't know if I buy that. Architect Whiplash, Architect's record that came out or is coming out. Oh, this is the single. That's right. Single that's coming off of their record for next year. Pretty decent. It's pretty standard Architects. So again, is it really best of? Baby Metal, Electric Cowboy. Not a big fan of either of these bands. Electric Cowboy is funny. I dig their sense of humor. I think they do great things as far as just livening up the scene, but I haven't listened to this. It won a Nick Nocturnal Award, so it must be pretty good because that's fan voted. That's totally a lie because, you know, people don't necessarily like quality. They like what's popular. Bad Omens featuring Poppy. This one I wanted to do a reaction to, but it's been out to the point where I don't think it's relevant to do a reaction to anymore. So I still haven't listened to it. Bad Omens is decent. They are definitely Octane Core, so meh. But Poppy's doing interesting things in the scene, even though she maybe doesn't have the best voice and started off as a pop, hence the name Poppy, started off as a pop princess. So yeah, I'm very interested to hear what's going on there, but I don't know if I'm going to like it very much. This one, Black Crowes, Wanting and Waiting. I heard this one. Good throwback rock, I guess. But again, this is supposed to be the best of the best, right? So why is this on? It just, whatever. Black Dahlia Murder, Aftermath. This one I can see. Part of this is because it's Black Dahlia Murder and this is their comeback record after losing their vocalist. So they kind of had to put this on here, but it makes sense to put this on here because Black Dahlia Murder, I feel like this is a quality record. The Servitude record is pretty nice. So yeah, for sure. I can see that one on there. Blink-182 on my head. In their genre, best in their genre, sure, but how many pop punk bands are there in 2024? It just Body Count featuring Joe Bad Psychopath. Sure. Yeah, I can see that one. I'll get behind that one. I think the new Body Count record is worth a listen to, if nothing else. And this is definitely one of those songs to get stuck in your head really easily. And that's hard to do with extreme types of music. So, yeah, I'll give it to him. Body Count works. Breaking Benjamin, Awaken. No, we did a quickie reaction to this when it came out on the in the regular news show, and just not particularly fond of Breaking Benjamin. Chris went to New York Comic Con back in October and met Cal Dodd. Why do I know the name Cal Dodd? I'm totally blanking, so I'm Googling right now. Oh, writer Cal Dodd. Gotcha. Or voice actor, rather. The voice actor for Wolverine in the 95... cartoon and the current 95 cartoon. That's dope, dude. I'm super stoked for you. That must have been super awesome. Where is the window? There it is. So next up, Bring Me the Horizon, top 10 statutes that cried blood. Bring Me the Horizon, they're interesting, but is it really? Again, I just I don't know. I don't know that this was necessarily a great year for music. It was a good year for music, but great year, I don't know if I would say this is part of that. Jerry Cantrell, Vilified. I just still haven't listened to that one yet either. I really want to. Chatpile, I actually literally just heard this song, and does it belong on the best of the year? I don't know. They're kind of a fresh band, so it was good. It was kind of a couple of shades of early Dillinger Escape Plan, or maybe not early Dillinger, mid-career Dillinger Escape Plan, because it wasn't quite that abrasive as early Dillinger. Groovy, super interesting to listen to. Best of the year, that's a bit of a stretch. Cradle of Filth, Malignant Perfection, again, big name, must be on the list. Sure, I know a little bit about this, as I haven't gone in detail into it, but I do know that there's not really much black metal on here. This is about as close as we're getting. I don't think there's any black metal on here, actually. This is about as close as we're going to get to black metal. It's another one of those another one of those songs that really gets stuck in your brain. I can understand why, because Loudwire is kind of the pop outlet for extreme music. Why Loudwire would put this on here, I don't know if I would have put this on here, but again, I listened to a bunch of singles and we talked about them on the channel, but nothing is really sticking out in my mind. Crypt Sermon, Thunder from Stygian Rose, that is actually a really, really good track. So yes, best of the year, I'll buy it. I'll buy that one for sure. The Cure, Alone, yes, it is ridiculously long because the intro is like 4 minutes long and the track is like 7.5 minutes long. So sure, because The Cure is amazing, I definitely would put this on this list regardless, but just my one nitpick of the intro being a little bit ridiculous. Met Chris Britton, who is Mr. Sinister, nice. AJ Lacascio, who voiced Gambit in 97, nice, dude. Remy LeBeau himself. Next one is Dark Throne. No, I don't think Dark Throne is a prime example of their kind of version of black metal. I think Dark Throne's heyday is behind them by a long shot. This is not, this does not belong in this list. Dark Tranquility, Last Imagination. I did listen to this track, but again, doesn't really stick out in my brain. So best of the year, probably not. Dotry Pieces. Sure, because it's the rock side of things and Dotry's got an incredible voice, but this is like cookie cutter radio rock nonsense. Dead Poets Society. I have not heard that song. I honestly don't know that band. Bruce Dickinson, Mandrake Project, haven't listened to that one yet either. Dorothy Mudd, nope, got nothing for you. Dream Theater, Night Terror. I really like Dream Theater, and like all of the prog metal nerds are generally into Dream Theater as well. The one thing I really don't like about Dream Theater is their vocalist. So would I put this on a list where Opeth has released a prog opus, like a masterpiece? No, probably not. I would say the Opeth tracks, the two tracks that they released from their upcoming record, or record that just came out rather, far outshine this, though this is still pretty solid Dream Theater track. I just can't get over their vocalist. Era, Cure. There was legit some better metalcore that came out this year too. So no. Exes, For What It's Worth, I haven't listened to that one. Falling in Reverse, Ronald. This one's a little bit controversial for me because I really, really like Alex Terrible. I'm slightly warming up to Falling in Reverse. Tech Nine is super talented as well. I can't say I'm a huge fan of Tech Nine, but I'm not going to turn him off if he's on I don't really listen to rap radio much anymore. But if he's doing a vocal spot, because this is not the first time he's done a metal thing, I'm not going to turn it off because of him. Like, he's, again, legitimately talented. Is Ronnie Radke, though, legitimately talented? That is the question. He's a great front man. He's super charismatic. But does that mean that his song should be on the best of the year? This is like, again, considering Loudwire, considering Falling in Reverse is one of the biggest names in the genre right now. I understand it. I would say maybe this is like the bottom of the list for best of the year because it's legitimately an infectious song. But this is like just barely scraping by on all counts. Five Finger Death Punch featuring DMX. Oh, yes. I totally forgot this track came out. And I also totally have not listened to it because this is another one where I wanted to do a reaction video and it was too late by the time I got around to it. So I haven't done it and therefore have not yet listened to the track. Funeral had featuring Spencer Charnas, the Spencer from Iceland Kills. Funeral Portrait feature. Didn't know this was a song. I'm going to have to go listen to that later, though, because that sounds interesting. Let's go back to chat. Nope. Gay Creeper, Caught in the Treads. Decent, again, barely scraping by with what I would consider best of the year. There's not a whole lot of death metal on here. Gate Creeper's pretty solid. Sure, I'll this one I think more deserves a spot than the Ronald song. So Gojira, Mea Culpa. Yes, largely just because it's Gojira, and even a mediocre Gojira song is better than 98% of the rest of the music out there. But I don't think this is their strongest track. I think the length of it is kind of playing against it. It's a very, very short song. It's like 2 minutes, 45 seconds. I'm pretty sure it's under 3 minutes, if I remember correctly. But I'm always disappointed by the length of the song because while I am a fan of strange musical structures, I am also a fan of digging in to whatever structure you've decided your song is going to have. And this one doesn't really dig in. Once you kind of get a feel for how it's flowing and how it's going back and forth, it's over. So it's always very disappointing to listen on the radio. So yes, it's Gojira. Yes, it deserves to be on here because they always put out some of the best stuff in any year that they release music. But this isn't one of their strongest tracks. Green Day Saviors, absolutely not. I said, who's putting out pop punk in 2024? Apparently Green Day is as well. We talked about this when it came out. Not going to get into it again. Hailstorm with I Prevail. Can you see me in the dark? This one has played a couple of times on Liquid Metal and I've caught it and it's meh. No. Hardy Rockstar, haven't heard it. High on Fire, Cometh the Storm. Anything off this record absolutely is going to be some of the best stuff you're going to listen to this year. This is actually one of the stronger showings, I feel like, for High on Fire. Just the production is on point. The performance is on point. There were a couple of issues with this single, I think it was. Maybe it was the first single. That the vocals kind of get lost in the mix. Generally speaking, though, absolutely deserves to be on this list. High Parasite Wasn't Human. Actually did listen to this. I think we did this in one of the quickie reactions as well. It's interesting. Is it best of the year because it's kind of its own genre? Maybe, but I really feel like we're grasping at straws. Iceland Kills, work of art. Yeah, this is some of that better metalcore I was talking about because the breakdown on this song gets me every time. Just the way it comes into it with the little horn. Oh my God, I laugh and even if somebody's playing it at work, like I still have to bang my head a bit because it's just that effective. Ginger, Someone's Daughter. Ginger put out better songs than this year. So Someone's Daughter is a showcase of like the breadth of their abilities, but is not the best showcase of that. We did not do a quickie reaction to this one. The one that we did do a quickie reaction to, and I'm forgetting the name of the song, is by far a better song. But yeah, Ginger deserves to be on here just for their other single. And the new single they just put out, I heard a clip of it in the car on my way home from the gym tonight. Last time I was in the car, maybe not last time before. Also really good. Anyway, Judas Priest, Serpent and the King. Yeah, Yeah, for sure. Name recognition helps for this one. Again, we are on a Loudwire list. Miles Kennedy, I know vaguely his style. Have not heard that song. Can't say. Kerry King, Idle Hands. I can see it. Forever Aligned, it is Killswitch Engage. This is another example of most of the music they're going to put out is going to be better than 98% of the stuff out there. So of course they deserve to be on this list, but I don't think Forever Aligned is one of their strongest songs. Put this one up against Signal Fire and you'll see what I'm talking about, because Signal Fire is amazing. Record is coming out in 2025 and I'm super stoked about it. We are actually going to be talking about Killswitch Engage it kind of vicariously in just a bit in the proper news. Kitty, Eyes Wide Open. If they had chosen any other single, I would say absolutely not. This very first single from the new, their new record is the only single that I think is effective and infectious enough to qualify for this list. Knocked Loose, Suffocate, this is the poppy track. Again, I feel like Knocked Loose put out like 4 singles over the course of 2024. The only reason they chose this one is because of the poppy guest vocal. I think the other 3 tracks they put out this year were better. All from this record, this is a good record, go listen to it, but I don't know that this is the best of the best. Lacuna Coil, this one was actually surprisingly good. As far as new metal goes, there wasn't a whole lot of new metal this year, so sure, best of the best as far as their genre goes. Speaking of new metal, we have Linkin Park's Emptiness Machine. This is borderline not even like rock. This is so poppy that it's really hard to justify putting it here, though it's a very well crafted, very well performed and recorded song, so sure. Tim Montana, I have no idea who that is. Billy Morrison featuring Ozzy Osbourne, did not listen to that. Nightwish, we talked about this one actually. Super impressed with the I'm pretty sure it was this single actually, Perfume of the Timeless. So yeah, sure. Let's do this for sure. Nile, this record was fantastic. I think anything they put in from this record is worth listening to and should be put on the list of best of 2024. Nothing More featuring David Draiman, Angel Song. I haven't listened to this song specifically, but I can speak to Nothing More and David Draiman individually. Solid as far as Nothing More goes. David Draiman's got one of the better voices in nu metal, though he makes really mediocre music. So maybe. But again, haven't listened to the track. Offspring, Make It All Right. Nope. I refuse to accept that they are on the best of anything list anymore after the shenanigans that they have pulled over the course of the last few years. Opeth, Paragraph 1. This is what I was talking about. This is the best of prog. Death metal, because Mikhail is doing his gutturals again. I mean, it's so genre amorphic that it's absolutely, again, this is another band, whatever they put out is going to be the best of that year, but this is a prime example of some of the best Opeth even, so for sure. Paleface Swiss Hatred. As far as deathcore goes, there was better deathcore. This is a solid track. I can understand why it's here. Again, Paleface Swiss has the recognition. They're the second most streamed band on Spotify. Wow, brain fart. So sure, I understand why they're here. And it's, again, solid song, but there was definitely better metalcore this year. Pearl Jam, Wreckage. Yes. Throwback rock, whatever you want to call them. They're still grunge, whatever. This was a really good song. Sure. Powerwolf, 1589. I know I heard this song, but nothing to write home about. Power metal, sure. Kid of Darkness. I liked, was it this one? I don't remember if it was this one or not. But it was one of the two tracks, because they've released 2 new tracks this year, and one of them was fantastic, and the other one was okay. I think Kid of Darkness was the okay one, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I always get their song titles confused when the album's not out yet. Where are we going next? Smashing Pumpkins? No, I don't think Billy's got it in him to be the best of anything anymore. I think that it's okay. It's definitely worth a listen, but best of the year, probably not. Speed, the first test, yes, and not just because of the flute solo. This is just really good hardcore. These dudes, where are they from? They're from Australia, I think. And just really solid hardcore. The fact that they have a little gimmicky element with the flute is kind of whatever. This is good stuff. Radiance from 7 Hours After Violet. I think that is also a solid choice. I think that Chavo is going to show us that he is more than System of a Down. He's already showing us that. This is the second time he's been on this list, but I just think that this project has a lot of really incredible potential, and I'm super excited about it. Spirit Box, Soft Spine, yes. this song is so stupid heavy. I absolutely believe that is what that is one of the songs that needs to be on this list. Sum 41, Landmines. I mean, if Blink 182's on here, I guess it makes sense that Sum 41's on here. So The Surge, AF Day, another one. I was going to do a reaction video and just couldn't get around to it. Nu Metal, Tetrarch. I guess not nu metal. This is metalcore. This is modern metalcore. Live Not Fantasize. I think Atreyu's single? No, it was the Alex. The what is the name of his freaking project? I can't even think right now. Icarus. Dead Icarus. There we go. Dead Icarus put out a much better metalcore track this year, even though Dead Icarus kind of straddles that line between metalcore and deathcore. I think that was a much more solid pick than Tetrarch. I think Tetrarch is a safe political pick for reasons we're not going to get into here. 3 Days Grace, Mayday, sure. Millennial throwback rock. Unleash the Archers, Green and Glass. Yeah, I can see that one being on here for sure. Because just the pure dynamics of this band, as far as their performances go, I'm here for it. Vended, I apologize. Kind of new metalcore-ish, right? Yeah, sure. I can see this one being on here too. I think for the genre, they're kind of sitting towards the top, and they put out music this year, so sure. Have not heard The Warning. Don't know that track. Jack White, That's How I'm Feeling. It's Jack White. Of course he's on the list. I haven't heard this track specifically, but this is another example of an artist that they put out anything, and it's going to be fantastic. Going to be the best of the best. All right, so that's the end of that list. Thank you very much for sitting through it, but let's get into some news now, shall we? First up, we just did a bunch of music, so let's go to these things. We have season 2 for Ahsoka is actually happening. From Dave Filoni, season 2 is going to be a challenge. This comes from Cosmic Book News. At the premiere of Skeleton Crew, Dave Filoni offers an update on Ahsoka season 2, confirming it is definitely happening. Reports have offered the second season will film next year, so 2025. Rumor has even claimed that Disney and Lucasfilm are prepping to end the series after season 2. Yeah, they really should. As vanilla as the first season was, I mean, I dug it, don't get me wrong, but not much happened. It makes sense that they would be ending it. Continuing on, Extra TV caught up with Filoni, who also serves as executive vice president and chief creative officer at Lucasfilm, who also said he's excited for Mandalorian and Grogu movie. I am so well into that as well. I've been writing it, and I'm still the single writer on it. So I've been enjoying doing that, but it's a challenge, of course. And working some of these arcs through has been a challenge, and making sure it's all going to come out in a way that I think is exciting for fans. I like that that's part of the statement, honestly, because that is important. That needs to be the focus. And I feel like for a long time at this point, a few years at least, Star Wars has not been focused on what is going to be exciting for fans. Filoni's work has been that way, but Star Wars as a whole, not so much. Continuing on, Filoni added, I know that they're interested in where some of the things I developed in season 1... What? Is that words? Is that an actual sentence? I know that they're interested in where some of the things I developed in season 1 come from, maybe? I don't know. Pretty happy with it. Love working with Rosario Dawson, so I can't wait to get back to that. What is Ahsoka? Oh, this is just going to get into what Ahsoka generally is about. I feel like with the cliffhanger that they left us on, they should do a season two. I feel like there is plenty of room for them to do better for season two. Hopefully that happens. That's all I got for that one, though. Let's get into the next piece. Is this Harry Potter piece? I have a feeling that as well. So we actually are going to get into Mandalorian Grogu movie in just a minute. But there is a strong possibility that it is going to be quite good. Continuing on, let's talk next about the Harry Potter series over on HBO or on Max. Sorry, it just sounds better to say HBO Max. Harry Potter series we've been talking about, keeping tabs on. We have a rumor, so chalk this one up 100% to rumor. We'll talk about likelihood at the end. But still, rumor that they're going to be race swapping Sirius, or not Sirius Snape, Severus Snape, Sirius Black, Severus Snape. There we go. Is claimed, so says Cosmic Book News, is claimed that Harry Potter TV series is eyeing Papa Isaidu to play Severus Snape, the fan favorite character from the books and movies. Severus Snape was played by late Alan Rickman in the popular films. The info comes from THR that adds if Papa Isaidu gets the role, it will also be an example of HBO following through on its promise that the series will have a diverse cast. The site points out that the Harry Potter movies, quote, have been criticized for having an entirely white core cast, and the casting, unquote, and the casting, quote, will presumably lead to a rather fresh take on the character, unquote. Okay, so let's talk about this for just a moment. Why does Harry Potter have an entirely white cast, core cast, I should say, because there are non-white characters in it? Because that's how it was written. Like, JK, it's mythology. It is knights. It's an updated kind of version, not knights and dragons, but updated version of magic, right? Like, this is something that's been going on for years in this area, and this area for ages and whatever, however far you want to go back, it was largely a white population. Therefore, the largely white cast makes sense. I know it's fantasy, and I know it's about wizards with magic wands who can do unreal things, but like that's why it was written that way. So it makes sense to continue making new projects. In that same way, if you want to expand the universe and add to the books, if JK signs off and lets other people write for her universe, or if she writes new books, which she said she's not going to, but if she signs off and lets somebody else add to the collection and expand her universe, and they get into something a little bit more modern and whatever, then that would make a little bit more sense. But I just don't see why this is necessary. If the source material was written one way, then there's a certain expectation with the fans. You're doing this because you want to make money. Fans are going to be the ones who spend the money. So why would you do something that the fans are not expecting and therefore cannot relate to and therefore are not going to want to watch? Like, it's just basic math. Anyway, let's continue on with the article. HBO wouldn't confirm the casting and only commented on the rumor. Quote, we appreciate that such a high-profile series will draw a lot of rumor and speculation. As we make our way through pre-production, we will only confirm details as we finalize deals. I just realized I think I'm on the wrong. Dang it. All right. Sorry. I was correcting things. Continuing. Papa Isaidu is known for I May Destroy You, The Lazarus Project, Gains of London, and The Capture. THR also says Mark Rylance is up to play Headmaster Albus Dumbledore. And Cillian Murphy is playing Voldemort. Isn't happening. Deadline also says Mark Strong is in contention to play Dumbledore. Why do I know Mark Rylance? There's a face that I'm not catching. Mark, let's Google. Well, or DuckDuckGo, whatever. Rylance. Mark Rylance. Oh, that's a cool choice. Okay, I can see it.
Another one. So again, I think that's
I think this is just rehashing things we already know. So, continuing on, going into... Oh, that's the trailer. I didn't want the trailer. I wanted her apology. Rachel Ziegler said some stuff, and we're going to get into her apology. We're not going to watch trailers. There's a bunch of trailers, and I did a couple of reactions. Those went up over the course of the last 2 weeks while we've been taking the break. I don't know if I'm going to do trailer reactions. They haven't been doing super great on the channel. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll do, like, one video where we just go through all of the new trailers. I don't know. It depends on how I feel and what kind of time I have. But let's actually go... There's a couple more articles, too. We'll go through those in a moment. Where is it? I clipped the wrong article. And Cosmic Book, you got to get your stuff together, homie, because when I go to the next set of articles, it should not be articles from 4 months ago. There we go. Rachel Ziegler. Come on, meow. Why does this take so long? Oh, because I spelled her name incorrectly. Whoops. C-H-E-L. Z-E-G-L-E-R. There's no I. Where is it? Unleashes new Snow White trailer. Epic meltdown. So this is what she said. We'll do this one real briefly. After the election, Ziegler said... This is the quote directly from her Instagram, I think, looks like. No, that's Twitter. Nope, Instagram. Find myself speechless in the midst of this. Another 4 years of hatred leaning us towards a world I do not want to live in. Leaning us towards a world that will be hard to raise my daughter in. Leaning us towards a world that will force her to have a baby she doesn't want. Not if she doesn't have unprotected premarital sex. Leaning us towards a world that is fearful. I shouldn't be this shocked, but I am. Good Lord. All right, so there's the thing that everyone took. There it is. Thing that everyone took issue with, because she is a Disney star saying this about approximately 76 million people who voted for Donald Trump. I echo Ethel Kane's statements more than anything. May Trump supporters and Trump voters and Trump himself never know peace. Did not sit super well with the Disney community. So this was the response. This is the article I wanted to get into. Rachel Ziegler once again backtracks on controversial comments, this time apologizing for her anti-Trump comments. Some consider a threat aimed at President Trump and his supporters. The actress who is set to play Snow White in Disney live-action movie had an epic meltdown following Donald Trump's landslide win over Kamala Harris, made Trump supporters, blah, blah, blah. We just went over that. This woman is a pig, quote-unquote. Following her comments, the actress again received massive backlash and was even called a pig by conservative talk show host Megyn Kelly, who demanded Disney remove Ziegler from Snow White. That's a really stupid thing to demand, let's be honest. Quote, hello, Disney, you're going to have to redo your film again because this woman is a pig and you fired Gina Carano for far less than this nonsense. That is kind of the point that I wanted to get to in this, because this is absolutely... like disparaging half of the country explicitly, and they're saying that what Gina Carano did was covert and that's why she got fired. This is explicit and she still has a job, so whatever. She has to go. I'm sorry, Disney, she has to go right now. There's something wrong with this person, unquote, said Kelly on her podcast. Ziegler's apology. She says, hi, everyone. I would like to sincerely apologize for the election post I shared on my Instagram last week. I let my emotions get the best of me. Hatred and anger have caused us to move further and further away from peace and understanding, and I'm sorry I contributed to the negative discord. She continued, this week has been emotional for so many of us, but I firmly believe that everyone has the right to their opinion, even when it differs from my own. Somebody got talked to by the executives at Disney, or the lawyers, one of the two. I'm committed to contributing positivity toward a better tomorrow, or positively, rather, toward a better tomorrow, unquote. Yeah, so there you go. That's fun. All right. And now, like I said, we're going to be talking about Star Wars, Mandalorian, and Grogu. There's been a fairly major, and this is just within the last couple of days. So those other articles kind of playing catch up, I'll admit, but, you know, it is what it is. Mandalorian just cast a new voice actor for Boba Fett's son. I don't remember the name of the son. It's somewhere in here. We'll get to it. No, not Boba Fett. Jabba the Hutt. Good Lord. Words. I was reading the wrong thing. So let's just read the article. First, we get Baby Yoda. Now it's Jabba the Hutt's son. It's learned that Jon Favreau will be featuring Rhoda. There it is. Rhoda the Hutt. I just didn't see it. Rhoda the Hutt in The Mandalorian and Grogu, which recently wrapped filming. Oh, that's... I totally just skimmed this article before. That's awesome. The news comes with it learned that Jeremy Allen White will be voicing the character. So if you don't know who that is by his name, he was Lip in Shameless, and he is Carmy in The Bear. Known for the breakout series The Bear, it's reported it's notably sized role and is not a cameo. So he is going to feature very heavily. I did not watch the series that Rhoda comes from, Clone Wars. I still have not watched Clone Wars, so I don't know if he previously had a voice actor or not, but it is now Jeremy Allen White, apparently. So last we heard, Jabba the Hutt was in the Book of Boba Fett, where it was learned that following the death of Jabba in Return of the Jedi, he was left to power vacuum on Tatooine. The series saw two of Jabba's cousins make a play for power, but they were defeated by Boba Fett and Fennec Shand. Boba Fett then ascended to power and took Jabba's place in Crime Lord of Tatooine, while Variety thinks it could mean that Temuera Morrison and Ming-Na Wen could be showing up in Mandalorian. Morrison said that he hasn't heard anything and isn't appearing in the film. No plot details are known about Mandalorian Grogu. Season 3 ended, blah, blah, blah. May 22nd, 2026 release, which is far too far out. Who is Rhoda the Hutt? Rhoda the Hutt's first appearance was in Clone Wars, like we just said, via StarWars.com, heir apparent to the Hutt Empire.
Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's awesome. Is that what they're doing for Joe Bob? It's on Fry Rags. That's really cool. All right, back to this. Sorry, sidetracked. Jabba the Hutt's infant son was barely old enough to slither before his conniving and power-hungry great-uncle Zero already had him marked for death at the time of the Clone Wars. Okay, so he probably didn't speak in the Clone Wars because he was an infant. And Baby Yoda, not an infant, but still a baby, still is not speaking. I'm sorry. Grogu. So I think that addition, to go back to what you were saying, Chris, I think that addition to the cast is definitely going to improve the quality quite a bit. All of that being said, let's move right along. I think that's all that we have from Cosmic Book. Let's go to... Oh, that's where I had the apology thing, was from Bounding. Oops, I got ahead of myself. Whatever. But let's continue right along. We now have How to Train Your Dragon live action remake. We have a casting announcement that, where is her name? Nico Parker is going to be playing the role of, where is it? Astrid. What? Astrid? Is that right? Yeah. Yes, Astrid. Nico Parker is going to be playing the role of Astrid. So let's get into this article. This one comes from Bounding Into Comics. In response to the deluge of pushback on his decision to race swap Astrid, live action How to Train Your Dragon director Dean DeBlois has argued that it ultimately does not matter if the young dragon rider's physical appearance matches that of her animated depiction, because he's not trying to make, quote, a shot-for-shot remake, unquote, of the original film. Again, they're Vikings. How many black Vikings do you know? Don't care that it's about dragons and it's a fantasy and whatever. It's fantasy about a very specific part of the world in a very specific time of history that there were no black Vikings. Making her franchise debut in the animated film trilogy rather than Cressida Cowell's original young adult novel, Astrid is depicted as a typical Scandinavian woman, bearing braided blonde hair, blue eyes, and fair skin, as well as an axe that could take the head clean off anyone who would stand in her way. However, in the live-action remake, the heroine bears a much different appearance, thanks to her being played by actress Nico Parker, daughter of Tandaway Newton, who readers may know as Val from in Solo Star Wars. No, you're going to know her from Westworld is what you're going to know her from most recently. She was also in the Chronicles of Riddick. She was also in Crash. Like, Tandy Newton has had a very colorful career, and she's really good actress. Honestly, didn't really realize that was her daughter until it was pointed out to me like two episodes into watching Last of Us. Anyway, the version of Astrid instead has dark skin, green hazel eyes, and curly but still braided brown hair. And regardless of Parker's individual talent, in light of her casting existing as yet another example of blatant race swapping in recent months, fans, social media, blah, blah, blah. To this end, DeBlois, who in addition to helming the upcoming remake, also served as writer and director of all three animated How to Train Your Dragon movies, weighed in on the ongoing discourse surrounding Astrid's live-action appearance via a post on his personal Instagram on the 21st of November. Bounding into comics, articles are always so dang long. Okay. So the original comment on his post was somebody talking about how America Ferrera originally voiced the character. So she's already voiced by a person of color, which is irrelevant because it's a voice. And so the visual depiction of is accurate to, once again, the time and place in which this is mythologically said to have happened. And so his response was exactly, we auditioned many actors for the roles, including actors who looked like their animated counterparts, but we chose the actors who best embodied the spirit and personality of the character, since the tribe in this version is made up of descendants of the finest dragon riders, of dragon fighters from everywhere the Vikings have ever traveled. So changing history a little bit. I mean, obviously Vikings went everywhere. I understand that. I also know that when he says Vikings mixed with many cultures, he's definitely glossing over some bloody and disgusting things that the Vikings did to many cultures. They didn't mix with them. They raped and pillaged. But yes, I do know that the Vikings were mixing with other cultures. But how many of those other cultures were then integrated into Viking culture? None of them. So you're changing history in order to make this work. Which, I mean, if there is a slim window of possibility that they can get away with this, in that they could say that Viking writers came from many different cultures, not just the Viking culture. That, I mean, that's there's a better way to put that, but that's effectively what it would boil down to. Let's make a prediction right now. So How to Train Your Dragon is incredibly popular. The three movies, I think it was three or four movies, have sold lots and lots of tickets and made lots and lots of money. That's why they keep making them. This is going to be the lowest performing of the group of movies. Is that going to stop them from making more like this? Probably not, because it's probably still going to be profitable. It's just not going to be as profitable. And the studio is going to see it as law of diminishing returns. The more movies we make, the less money they make individually, but the more the franchise makes us. So it's probably an argument that's lost on the ears of people who don't care, who are just in it for a paycheck. But it's just bad form. It's just bad form. Let's move on. We have two more, and then we'll talk about the other non-news thing. And I think, actually, we're going to have to call it a little bit short. Yes, trailer for 28 Years Later did drop today, and that is a trailer that I am going to be doing a reaction to, because I'm super excited about it. I saw, like, 2 seconds of it. I forget exactly how. I think I accidentally moused over it on my YouTube my front page, and the little bit I saw had me very much excited. And then I've heard a few things about it as well, so super. I thought I heard you say something. Yeah, I back to live action How to Train Your Dragon. I think that I think is going to do more than break even. I think it's going to be profitable. I just don't think it's going to be nearly as profitable as any of the animated versions. Because they've, like I said, they've made a lot of money. And so it's just a matter of people not getting the right message that are behind making these properties. So it just kind of is what it is. But yeah, 28 years later, gonna try and avoid it for another day or two so that I can do a proper reaction this year or this week. But yeah, I'm super excited about it. You did a video on 28 years. That's pretty awesome, dude. All right. We are going to go to the Devon Sawa piece. So we talked about this. I think I mentioned it at least in one of the last episodes of the previous regular season. But we have Idle Hands being remade by Finn Wolfhard and Jason Reitman, which is interesting. Finn Wolfhard is getting behind the camera now, apparently. And so Devon Sawa is weighing in, not necessarily with his opinion as to whether or not it needs to be remade, because I don't think he really cares, but he's got some funny things from behind the scenes. So this, again, comes from Bounding in the Comics. 90s nostalgia is taking hold, probably a decade later than it should have, but it is nonetheless. Also, in full swing at a convenient time for Hollywood when they mine the past for ideas instead of thinking up new ones, which is very accurate. The fact of life is so rampant at cinemas that they're digging deep for things to remake. Enter 1999 horror comedy about a stoner's possessed hand running amok, Idle Hands. It is being prepped for a remake treatment no one expected from a team becoming more renowned lately for tackling major properties that are hallmarks of supernatural hijinks. Variety is reporting that Stranger Things star Finn Wolfhard and filmmaker Billy Brick are working on a reimagining produced by second-generation Ghostbusters film director Jason Reitman. Oh, so Reitman's not going to be... He's just going to be producing. I'm a little bit more okay with him just being producer and not director. Not going to lie. Interestingly, the biggest question about Wolfhard's involvement isn't if he will star, but rather if he will direct. Interesting. I do agree. He and Brick debuted their first feature, Hell of a Summer, as a writing and directing duo last year. Now they are endeavoring to write the new Idle Hands, minus confirmation whether they will direct it to or not. Finn and Billy crushed their directorial debut and have completely original take on Idle Hands that captures a disaffected generation. I'm slightly more okay with this now. Excited to support them as they bring in their unique take to the screen and summon the demons. I'm legit more okay with this happening now. Not gonna lie. Because before it was like, come on, cash grab is too, a little obvious. But, I mean, I think Finn Wolfhard, while not the best as far as, like, acting in this generation of younger actors, obviously Timothy Chalamet takes that, but he's one of the better ones from the crop of the Stranger Things kids, and the fact that he's getting behind the camera a little bit more is pretty awesome. So I'm intrigued, we'll at least hold our breath until the trailer drops for this, and then we'll probably make some knee-jerk reaction judgments. Next up, though, let's talk about the Minecraft movie that we've been keeping tabs on. This is from, who was it that made this statement? Producer. Minecraft movie producer says Jack Black Steve is inspired by the humor that we have seen in the community over the years, like through YouTube videos and all of their creations. So this is, because I'm still at a loss for who the hell they're making this for. I am not a Minecraft guy, so maybe that's why I don't understand. But let's read the article and see if there's some explanation here. Honestly, I think I could ask Chris, because you are quite a bit younger than I. Is there any excitement as far as what you're aware of for the Minecraft live action movie? Like, is this a thing in the community? Are you even a Minecraft player? Is it so good? Oh, I have some pizza for the in-between time. Oh, boy, the Minecraft trailer. Yeah. No, we're not talking about the trailer. We've already talked about the trailer. We're going to talk a little bit about the reasoning behind why they're making this movie. So let's get into that, I think. Okay, so The article reads, again, from Bounding Into Comics. Buckle up, viewers, and particularly the parents of said viewers. If one felt that the ironically detached humor of its first trailer completely missed the mark, they'll likely be disappointed to learn that, according to the film's producer, Torfi Franz Olofsson, the writing for Steve's character in the live-action Minecraft movie will be directly inspired by, quote, the humor, unquote, of the game's online community. Okay. Olofsson, who serves as producer via his role as Minecraft Senior Director of Original Content for Microsoft. Oh, that's right. I remember we talked about that. Spoke to the film's writing during a recent interview given by IGN's Alex Stedman following the release of Minecraft's latest trailer. There was a new trailer. We talked about that as well in the last episode of the regular season. Reflecting on the production team's approach to bringing the popular building block game as originally developed by Marcus Notch Persson to the silver screen, Olofsson began by tackling the film's most controversial move, portraying the entirety of its events in live action. He says, quote, I mean, that was one of the things fans are saying in response to the trailer, recalled the producer. Why is this live action? Why isn't it animated? I think a lot of people were expecting that. And just the fact that there was live action and directly real life characters and physical assets didn't feel right with them. Wow. Vocabulary in some people. Because in their imagination, they've been playing it for a very long time. Sorry, I'm really reading this. And they've kind of projected and seen a bunch of content, obviously, that's been made both by us, the community we've made with a story mode. Wow. Words. That is kind of word salad. We made animated content before, and there's a lot of it out there, he added. But that was also one of the reasons why the filmmakers wanted to go with live action rather than animate it, rather than do something that's already been done. I mean, I can see the argument. I don't think it's a good argument, but I can see it. To this end, Olofsson then explained that the film would be, quote, very firmly in what we all refer to as vanilla Minecraft, like the unmodified Minecraft. That's what vanilla means. One of the characters of the movie, the young character Henry, he enters the world, then is kind of a creator and maker in the real world, he said. His character then represents the maker or modder or builder coming into this world. And as a result, we're going to see some really classic stuff, stuff that we want to see, some beast creepers, endermen, and that kind of stuff. And then we're going to see some new stuff that Henry made. Oh, yeah, they're absolutely making the movie because Minecraft is one of the biggest phenomenas in gaming, like in all of gaming history, like is incredibly huge. Live action probably isn't the best way to go, but I do think animation would probably be better. But at the same time, the Minecraft game we're familiar with doesn't really have a story. But they've kind of tacked on stories to Minecraft, haven't they? So, I mean, irrelevant to vanilla Minecraft is storyless. It's just you're there building things and trying to avoid the zombie guys, right? Because at night, that's when the zombie things come out. Again, going by rote, I've never played it. This is what I remember. So, is there... Like, is there a world where it makes sense that a Minecraft movie even exists? Because you can, since they've tacked on their own stories, they've made those story expansions or whatever, could this just be viewed as a non-playable version of that, where this is just a story expansion that they're tacking on to the game? Or is the community just not even down for that? But then he kind of contradicts himself later in this statement. So back to the statement in the article, one of the characters in the movie, we just read that. Quote, I know people may go like, wait, that's not in the game, he further affirmed, but anybody who's played Minecraft for a while has usually installed some sort of resource pack or mod or changed it in some way for themselves, and that's what this character is doing. So he said that they're largely going to be in vanilla Minecraft, but then he's now saying that at least some of what Henry does is going to be similar to mods and resource packs So, I don't know, that just seems contradictory. Now, from there, producer turned from the film's world-building to its character writing, telling Stedman that one notable challenge the team faced was just how to tackle the character of Steve, as played by Borderlands actor Jack Black. Why do we just go with the last thing they did when we're writing these articles? I think that's silly. You know Jack Black from so many other better things. Who, rather than having an actual personality to speak of, has always existed as the blank default player avatar. In fact, began life as nothing more than a default skin for new Minecraft players. He's like an empty page, write your story on, detailed Olofsson film's version of the hero. But that was also an opportunity. So casting Jack Black as Steve, maybe you hadn't imagined Jack Black as Steve, but this is the Steve which is Jack Black. What? If you know what I mean. Because I'm Steve, you're Steve. Okay, I see what he's saying. And everybody has been Steve, and this one is Jack Black Steve. So he's kind of saying, we're doing this for fun. Like, this is kind of the underlying context, I think, of this statement is, we're doing this for fun because we want to capitalize on the fact that this is the biggest gaming community, consistent gaming community probably ever. It's second to maybe Fortnite, maybe. But Minecraft's been going on so much longer than Fortnite, you can't even say that. But, so he's saying, we're doing this for fun. None of it matters. None of the casting of Jack Black, none of the ridiculousness matters because you're still going to play the game. So maybe if you want to go see a live action version of the game to get out of the house for a second, like it seems like an exercise in futility in so many ways. Interesting. Very interesting. I think that's all of the expansion. Yeah, and that's basically the end of the article anyway. So very interesting. Okay. All right. So that's the end of that. Let's talk. Let's check chat one more time. Only Minecraft game that really had a story is Minecraft Story Mode. But if we play the Minecraft game, everyone plays. The only really real story we have is to survive and kill the Ender Dragon. Oh, there is a point. I really legitimately thought it was like a Sims thing. Like you're just in there experiencing your own builds. You're building things. You're experiencing other people's builds. And they added the Enderman as just a thing to motivate you to keep playing. But apparently there is an Ender Dragon too. That's kind of cool. Alright, I feel like I understand this a little bit better now. Let's move on. So, the next thing that we are talking about is Mortal Kombat 1. And then I think that ends the news portion. We might not get into gaming tonight just because we had all those difficulties to begin with that set us back by quite a bit. So, let's get into Mortal Kombat 1. This is the current state of things as I see it, and I'm going to tie in some of my opinion as to where we're going, if we're going anywhere. So, excuse me. A few weeks ago, this week, we're going to kind of, there's a lot of loose ends that we need to talk about. A few weeks ago, Interloco, who is a data miner in the Mortal Kombat community, meaning he goes through the lines of code in the game to see if he can see things that they're planning for in the future, effectively. I mean, there's a little bit more to it than that, but that's kind of what boils down to. So Interloco, one of two major data miners, the other one being the Thinny, and I think we're not going to actually get into anything that the Thinny has said, though I do know that the Thinny has confirmed a lot of the things that Interloco came out with. So this is from November 23rd. So this is three weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, Interloco produced these two images about Combat Pack 3, because in the information, he was running filters, which I don't exactly follow how that works. I can't comprehend what that means necessarily, but these filters led him to believe that these were our options for Combat Pack 3 characters. Presumably just the Mortal Kombat characters, but they are as follows. We have Blaze, Cassie, Blade, because in Mortal Kombat 1 universe, it wouldn't have been Sonya and Johnny. It would have been Cassie and somebody else. Sonya and somebody else, presumably. So Cassie, Blade, Dagon, Su Hao, Jade, Jarek, Cobra, Kotal Kahn, Mocap, Nightwolf, and Triborg. And then a different set of filters led him to believe that the game possible characters for Combat Pack 3 would be Blaze, Su Hao, Jade, Jarek, Cobra, Kotal Kahn, Nightwolf, and Triborg. So a lot of overlap here. The ones in the squares, for those of you looking, those of you listening in the post, there are some characters that have squares around them in these images. Those in the first image being Blaze, Cassie Blade, and Cobra. And in the second image being Blaze, Jade, Cobra, and Kotal Kahn have one color around them. And then Su Hao, Jarek, Nightwolf, and Triborg have a different color around them. So the squares are characters who share a slot together in the code. Presumably somewhere around character select or something along those lines. So it will be one or the other, not both. It doesn't, on the green squares, he doesn't necessarily have them paired up, but we do see Su Hao and Jarek paired up, so it'll be one or the other. And then we see Nightwolf and Triborg paired up, so it'll be one or the other. So these characters, I think, are kind of irrelevant. I think that a lot of them are just placeholders. We know very explicitly at this point that Cobra is not going to be a playable character in the traditional sense, because he's already kind of a playable character in that he is one of the personas for Ghostface. So Cobra and Kira both are the alternate personas for Ghostface. Not going to be playable characters. Could they be cameos? Sure. Cameos are kind of fair game for whatever. We're not going to talk about cameos because cameos don't follow the same rules, and there's no real easily discernible way how they're determining who gets cameo spot and who doesn't. Aside from, I don't think we're going to get a guest cameo. It's just we're going to get guest characters, but whatever. So, and for those of you who are getting ahead of me, yes, I know that there have been some talk of Mortal Kombat 1 being dead in the water. Combat Pack 3 is not happening. We're going to get there. As far as these characters are concerned, I really don't think any of them were up for grabs aside from Jade and maybe Jarek. Maybe Jarek. Nightwolf, they're going to save for the next game because I think they're going to give us another race or gender swap version, gender swap character in Nightwolf. But Triborg, not going to be here because all of the personas, unless he is a cameo, again, cameos follow different rules. Triborg's not going to be in this game had Combat Pack 3 been a thing. Again, there is still a slim possibility that it is, but we're going to get there. Because all of the other elements of Triborg are present in this game. I would be very, very surprised if we ever see Triborg again. So where did this list of characters come from? Probably using these. Also, Su Hao, no way in hell. Was one of the least popular characters in Mortal Kombat history. And when he died in the comic books, people literally cheered. So no, Su Hao is probably never going to be in another game again either. Unless they do some crazy rework and make him awesome like Tremor, which I highly doubt. I would be willing to put money on the fact that they put these names in the code for this very reason, so that we would be having this conversation, so that we would be speculating over placeholder text, because that's what this is. We're reading lines of text and seeing these names and going, oh, this must be where it's going. I think there's a lot of subterfuge on NetherRealm's part as far as Combat Pack 3 is or was concerned. So I think it would be super interesting to see how they would reimagine Blaze in this new era. I think that Jade was kind of a given. I think Cassie Blade also, maybe not as Cassie Blade, but possibly, was a little bit of a given as well, because she's been in and out of the code for so long. Like, I think this new strategy has not been in place the whole time, where they're throwing in red herrings all over the place. We've speculated at red herrings before, but I don't think we've ever actually gotten red herrings before. Just, you know, things didn't pan out, so they took certain things out of the code, in previous games. So then from there, we have the leak from, what's his name? Reddit poster. Where did it go? Fate Unknown, right there. So Fate Unknown then posted that there's been a couple of things from Fate Unknown, so we're almost to the cancellation. But Fate Unknown to my knowledge, has never been incorrect in any sort of major way. He might have been a little bit off in some ways, but by and large, one of the most consistent leakers, very likely somebody who actually works at NetherRealm. So he has started leaking information
back in Mortal Kombat 11 days. Maybe was X, but I don't remember seeing him. I wasn't also as active in the community for X. So just my understanding of where Fate Unknown comes from is in the Mortal Kombat 11 cycle. And that's when he started getting this track record of being one of the most accurate leakers. He said that we're going to be seeing Jade, Cassie Cage, Kung Jin, Sonya, and Kano as characters. And then he didn't say who the guest character, but he said that we were going to get those and then two guest characters, not three for Combat Pack 3. Then he said, which that seems like a fairly accurate, because Kung Jin has been in and out of the code a lot. Sonya as well. Kano, I don't think we've seen Kano proper in any of the data mined code at all. But we've seen Sonya at least in the early days of the game. Jade has, like I said, is kind of a given at this point. And then we got information from Fate Unknown that was presumably confirmed by two other insiders through Thinny and Interloco, specifically through Thinny. I'm not going to try and pull him up just because I don't want to take the time. But Thinny said that he has confirmed. The last thing we heard from Thinny about this was that he has now had confirmed by two other sources the same thing that Fate Unknown has said, in that Combat Pack 3 is not going to be happening because Chaos Reigns sold fairly poorly, amongst other things, other reasons. Seems that fan backlash might have been a little bit too much as far as Cyrax and Sector were concerned, which we saw coming. So that leaves us to why I have any sort of hope at all. If we have three presumable insiders in NetherRealm telling us that Combat Pack 3 is not happening, we're going to get Conan next and then T-1000 after that, and that's it. They've started work on their next game, and so they're not going to be supporting Mortal Kombat 1 anymore. Let's look at that, because those three leakers all confirmed to Thinny. Thinny did not give us, well, actually, I'm second guessing that, so maybe we should go see Thinny. Thinny did not give us the characters that the other two leakers said, but we'll just search for Thinny. The Thinny, fine. There he is. The Thinny. So Thinny said, that's his pinned. Oh, also Conan trailer dropped as well. Like I said, lots of trailers. Where is it? Divided community. All information of Mercy and Floyd has been deleted from the code. Yes, that is, again, kind of to be expected. All right, so Thinny says, and yeah, it looks like he did not give us the list. Since wording of my last post was confusing, it's an awesome way of explaining it. Fate and another insider are saying KP3 is canceled, but they both have different DLC lists. So they both had different characters that were going to be part of DLC KP3. So, I guess it was just one other insider. I thought he said there was a second. Oh, I was assuming there was a confirmation from somebody else and then this one, but I guess not. So, the second lead, I was wrong, it was two, not three. But still, second insider said that KP3 was canceled, but her list of characters was different, which means the powers that be at NetherRealm were likely disseminating false information to find the leaks. Because after this, Fate Unknown deleted their Reddit account and I believe their social media accounts too. So it seems like they rooted out their leak and they took care of it. And so, and the reason I say this is because we have different DLC lists, right? But also, if they're not within approximately 2 years of releasing the next game, very likely if they're not within a year of announcing the next game, then they're not going to stop at least some sort of cursory support of the current game, just because that's the way that NetherRealm works. That's the way that Warner Brothers wants the rest of their company to work, because NetherRealm is the one that's been making them money. So that is the reason why I still have faith that there, or still have a glimmer of hope, I guess I should say, that there will be some sort of KP3. Will it be huge? Will it be as big as Chaos Reigns? Probably not. They're not going to put that kind of money into it if it didn't sell super well. But I think there will be, there's been speculation. Some people are thinking that maybe they'll give us a smaller DLC count and they'll release those characters individually instead of as a pack. I think that is totally within the realm of possibility. I think that the likelihood of them completely abandoning it after T-1000 is very, very slim. Very, 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 very slim. So, yeah, with that being said, that's where I'm weighing in on the Mortal Kombat situation as it stands. I thank you very much, nerds, for sticking around. I am going to put up the Be Right Back screen, though I don't know if we will be right back in any sort of meaningful way. If we do, then it will be gaming. If not, then I appreciate your faces. This is, though, where the news portion ends, if you are watching in post or listening in post. So thank you very much, nerds, for coming by this belated news show, the live, the off-season, the live shows, all of that stuff is going to continue for a little while I get the next season up and running. There will be off weeks. Like I said, next week very possibly is going to be an off week. Oh, there's the dubby. It's been up the whole time. Anyway, so next week very possibly will be an off week. Stay tuned to the X. Stay tuned to the YouTube communities page, because that is going to be where I do the update as far as what we will be doing next week specifically. Also, like I said, Dubby, you can see it on screen now, thankfully. Dubby's channel partner, super excited to have them be part of this. You can use code GENERALLYNERDY at checkout. Dubby.gg is the website, or follow the link down in the description. It is on the Rumble page as well. Hopefully it made it over to the Twitch description, but you know, the Twitch being what it is, I don't think we're going to get a whole lot of views over there. So yeah, thank you very much, nerds. We will see you next time. Before we go, always, always remember that if it's generally nerdy, it's probably here. And hopefully I can figure out audio if we do actually get into some gaming. See you in a bit.